today. To Shattering Mists. I'm your host, Yetta. We're going to turn the page and consider Yah's testimony. Before we do, I would like to comment on the item in the news that spoke of how many people had died and how many people are missing because of the ongoing drug wars in Mexico. That, too, has the United States to blame. It is because of the American thirst for drugs, for mind-altering life-escaping compounds that these wars are being fought. Mexico has become the principal channel of drugs manufactured elsewhere, typically, into America. And so, as a combination of the fact that our education system has failed our children, that our religions have failed our children, and that there is our economics schemes, our grotesquely immoral economic schemes have failed our children, that America is the most drugged country on earth. And then to make matters worse, after all of that, the drugs are called illegal, which makes them enormously profitable for those who engage in the supply. You know, this story is as old as humankind. When you make something illegal, you know, for example, when the United States made alcohol illegal, that's when the bootleggers, that's when the family fortunes like the Kennedys were made. Supplying that which was illegal made them much more money than it could ever have been made when it was legal. Same thing is true with drugs. The only way to win that kind of a battle is to educate people so that they understand how to exercise good judgment, which means you have to eliminate political correctness from our educational system. You have to remove religion, which is the enemy of evidence and reason. You need to give people economic hope, which means you have to eliminate the entitlement mentality of our current society. And that's the only way to prevail in this. And then you make anything that someone can do that is harmful to themselves, but no one else, legal. But you create the environment where people have the wherewithal to say, yeah, it may be legal, but it's stupid. Anyway, it's another sign of how far we have fallen and how large the disconnect is between the way Americans arrogantly think of themselves and the actual reality of the American condition. Yesterday in Shattering Mists, the second half of the program, we were focused on Yah's statement regarding the fourth day, where God said, "And there shall be lights in the expanse of the heavens." He didn't say, "I'm going to create the lights in the expanse of the heavens." He just says, "The lights in the expanse of the heavens shall be." And they are there to divide day from night, and they exist as symbols and signs. Symbols and signs. They are signals, distinguishing markers for the appointed symbolic meeting places and times, the Moed, the title that Yahweh uses to describe his Moed Mikre, the seven annual invitations to meet with him for days and for years. Spiritually speaking, Yahweh had more to say about his Moed Mikre and the correlation between the greater and lesser lights. He says they exist as lights in the expanse of the heavens to give light for the earth. Existing and established, God fashioned the two large luminaries, the greater luminary to rule over the day, and the lesser luminary to govern the night and the stars. God knows that the moon is not a source of light, but that's not what the term Mimshalah means, nor does is that which the concept of a lesser, if, as in Katan, suggests. He is talking about dominion, influence. And so he's saying that the Katan, the smaller influence, is younger chronologically, which means that it was created after the greater source of light. In other words, God created Satan for a specific purpose. And that this lesser luminary, this Katan luminary, is smaller, insignificant, unimportant, younger chronologically, lowly of status. From Kut, is loathed, opposed, adversarial, abhorred, detested. Now, God's not saying that the moon is these things. This is a sign. This is a signal. This is a means for you to symbolically understand the story that is being presented here. He's saying that darkness is what you want to avoid. Light is what you want to be attracted to. He says, I am the source of light. I am the greater source of light, the greatest source of light. I am the gadol source of light, distinguished, magnified, powerful, able to do wonderful things. And that you need to recognize that light is good, darkness is bad. There is an adversary that would guide you in the darkness. And then there is myself, the greater light, here to enlighten you, to bring you into all of the positive aspects of light, which is perfection and eternity and power, enlightenment. This is what is being conveyed. So in this passage, the greater and lesser luminaries govern. They have dominion over their respective conditions, light and the absence of light. The greater source of illumination and authority is important and distinguished, magnified and powerful, able to do marvelous and wonderful things. The enormity of his magnitude and intensity suggest only one individual, Yahweh, and his diminished manifestation, still magnificent, the Messiah, Messiah Yahusha, the corporeal manifestation of Yahweh. The adversary, HaSatan in Hebrew, as a fallen messenger, is still luminous, albeit abhorrent and detestable in opposition to the light. Acquiescing to his authority leads mankind backwards away from God into the gloomy, lightless enclosure known as the abyss, a black hole, the prison, for this source of reflected light. God established Natan, the expanse of the heavens, for light upon the earth, to rule over the day and to divide and separate light from darkness. God saw that it was good. His message to us is all about separation. He wants to separate us from the darkness unto the light. He wants us to be set apart from the world of darkness unto his covenant. It is all about division. It will always be about division. You cannot drag the world of religion and politics into his home. If you want to be religious, you're excluded from God's family. If you want to be political, that's your choice, but you'll be excluded, divided, and separated from God's family. You want to be patriotic because it's fun to be patriotic, and you'll have lots of people tell you how wonderful you are if you're patriotic. That's your choice, but if you're going to be patriotic, you are excluded, separated from God's family. These are your choices. You can choose the darkness of religion, and politics and propaganda and patriotism and have your thinking clouded. You can be opposed to the light. That is your choice. God established it that way. It's a choice. Free will. You have the opportunity to get to know him and understand what he is offering by observing his Torah, by listening to him, or you can be influenced by the forces of darkness. Religion, politics, patriotism, militarism, et al. Well, God saw that this choice that he was providing us was good. And the opportunity for us to embrace him was good. Our opportunity to leave the darkness and enter the light. It's good. To Bob, agreeable, excellent, appropriate, productive, and beneficial. From God's perspective, it is. And it should be from ours. The purpose of scriptural revelation is to segregate souls. We can choose to either azab, separate ourselves, or bereth, engage in the covenant relationship. This is why when asked about bringing peace, Yahusha said, I didn't come to bring peace. I came to bring division. I came to promote separation. He's recorded as saying this not once, but three times. We can choose light or darkness, enlightenment or ignorance, instruction or confusion, safety or distress, life or death, the creator or the creation. We can choose to be beguiled by Pauline doctrine, religion of Christianity, socialist secular humanism, and their belief systems, which we've devoted programs to, showing that the very foundation of their belief system, which is an uncaused cause for the Big Bang and random chance creation of life, is disproven by the evidence. And therefore, faith in the foundation of socialist secular humanism is a flawed proposition. That's why we devoted the time to do that. But you can still choose to be a socialist secular humanist and call yourself enlightened if you wish. You can choose to be religious. Yahusha said, I came to bring division. The vast preponderance of people embrace politics and patriotism. They embrace religion. They honor their military. The vast majority of people, very few, separate themselves from these human schemes, walk out of the darkness into the light. But that is the call that we all have to make. Or we can ignore the choice at all, smother ourselves in the comfort of lies, and squander our souls, squander free will, squander the ultimate gift that has been given to us, Yah's Torah, that presents all of these things to us. You know, our very existence is purposed by this choice, making these words worthy of our consideration. Mine and yours. I'm Yada. This is Shattering Mess. Hello, welcome back to Shattering Mess. I'm your host, Yada. You can engage in our discussion. Our number is toll-free, 877-376-45. Historically, in accordance with the oath symbolism of the Moed Mikre that Yahweh is speaking about here, the Moed Mikre are invitations to be called out and to meet with God. The Gadol, the magnificent, mighty, and important, the distinguished individual, the magnified, great, and powerful luminary, able to do and create great things, appeared right on schedule during the closing days of the fourth millennia of human history. This would be right at year 4000 Yah, which is the concluding year of the fourth millennia. For example, the first millennia concludes, starts with year zero, if you will, and concludes with year 1000. The next millennia concludes with year 2000. Now, the reality is that our timing is off because the Roman Catholic Church not only chose incorrectly the year that Yahusha arrived, but it wasn't his arrival that God was using for his calibration of time. You see, this notion that God was born is as idiotic as the notion that man killed God. God is immortal. God cannot be born. Therefore, the whole myth associated with Christmas is just asinine. And God cannot die, which means the whole myth associated with Easter is equally asinine. The reality is that the year that Yahweh was recognizing being year 4000 Yah, the fourth day, because this is now a presentation of the arrival of the greater illuminary, the great one, able to do great things, arriving in the fourth millennium of human history. Year 33 CE was year 4000 Yah, because exactly 1,000 years later, in 968 BCE, is when Solomon, based upon the work of Dodd, was able to construct the first temple on Mount Moriah, God's home, representing his family. It was exactly 1,000 years before that, in 1968 BCE, that Abraham affirmed the Torah, covenant presentation, when he went to that same mountain, Mount Moriah, with the first child of the covenant, Yishak, which means laughter, which defines the nature of the covenant, to have a good time with God, and went through a dress rehearsal where every aspect of his journey mirrors an aspect of Yahusha's celebration of Passover in 33 CE. That was 968 BCE. Now, the reason this is 968 and 1968, and that's exactly 1,000 years to 33 CE, is there is no year zero in the conversion from BCE to CE on the pagan calendars that we use today. 1,000 years before Abraham did this, in 2968 BCE, was the flood. We can time the flood now, not only because of the scriptural references, particularly as the dates are maintained in the Septuagint, more accurately than they are in the Masoretic, but also because of the impact of the Burkle crater, which was the source of the welling up of seawater that caused the great flood as it's described in this the Torah's account. That occurred in 2968 BCE, 1,000 years prior. And exactly 1,000 years prior to that, in 3968 BCE, nearly 4,000 BCE, Adam and Chawa were booted out of the garden for the choices they had made. And so now if you look at the fourth millennia, the end of the fourth millennia of humankind, you come to 33 CE in our pagan calendars, 4000 Yah. That is the year that Yahusha, the greater illuminary, fulfilled the first four moed. The moed that are described here, the very sign for the moed, fulfilled by Yahusha in exactly year 4000 Yah, fourth day of creation. That's the specificity that is available to us here today if we wish to understand his timeline. And so here you go. You've got this, the first day about, all about Yahweh and his light, and you have that being the story of Adam, the man, one man created by the one God in his image, for the purpose of the one singular relationship. The second day then is all about waters, speaking of the deluge, which occurred right on schedule in the last year of the second millennia. And we will continue this timeline when we return in a moment. Presented in the creation account, you understand this timeline and you'll know exactly when Yahweh is returning to reconcile his relationship with Yisrael and with Yehudim. You'll know when the tribulation is going to end, therefore you will also know when it's going to start. God declared his timeline right in the beginning, right in the midst of the creation account. He told you that the formula he was going to use was a 6 plus 1. He told you that on the seventh day he would rest, and on the seventh millennia of human history, we, those who have embraced the covenant, who have come to understand what God is offering by observing the Torah, will spend 1,000 years with Yahweh in conditions that return the entire earth and the relationship back to the Garden of Eden. And so the 1,000 years are all marked off as follows. I will correlate them to our pagan calendars so that you have an idea as to when these things happened. But year zero is when time mattered, and that the history of humankind was now being processed, is when Adam and Chawa were booted out of the Garden of Great Joy. It is interesting that Adam lived for exactly 1,000 years, including the time that he spent in the garden. One man, one God, one relationship, one garden, and that is the essence of day one. It explains why God created the universe. At the end of that time is when we have the flood. 2968 BCE. This is day 1000, and the flood is spoken of by all of the emphasis of water on the second day of creation. It is about choice of which side of the divide you're going to be on. And it is at that time that the Burkle Impact Crater created the upwelling of seawater that the creation account presents relative to the flood. Then exactly 1,000 years later, which is important because now we're talking about 40 Yovel, in this same Torah, God will speak of his Yovel of 7 times 7 plus 1. It is memorialized annually in Shavua in the festival of 7 Sabbaths, which is 7 Sabbaths, 7 sevens from Bukurim, but 7 sevens plus 1 day from unleavened bread. That 40 Yovel from the time that Adam and Chawa were booted out of the garden, we have the covenant being affirmed on Mount Moriah between Abraham and Yahweh. This is the perhaps the second most important day in all of human history, is when the covenant that year in year now 2000, when God and Abraham affirm the one and only covenant relationship. Then we move forward exactly 1,000 years from there, and we have the establishment of Dode's kingdom, the kingdom of love in Yisrael. We have its capital being in Jerusalem, and we have Solomon using what Dode had provided, Dode is corrupted to David, to establish the first home, Beth, the temple of Yahweh, for his family in Jerusalem, 968 BCE. Exactly 1,000 years later, which would be 40 Yovel, from the time that Abraham and Yahweh affirmed the covenant on Mount Moriah, the greater luminary, consistent with the third day of creation, arrived in Jerusalem. He then fulfilled, just as this prophecy in Genesis 1 foretells, he fulfilled the first four moed, the first four meetings. This was in year 4000 Yah, exactly the end of the fourth millennia of human history, the fourth day. This was 33 CE on our pagan calendars. He walked into Jerusalem 4 days before Passover, became the Passover lamb, sacrificed his soul, separating it from Yahweh's spirit, enduring Sheol on matzah, unleavened bread, to make us perfect, to redeem us, and then showing us the way that God will adopt us and empower us with his spirit. Soul and spirit were reunified on Bukurim, and then on seven Sabbaths, 49 days later, Yahweh fulfilled his promise to enrich and empower his children. That is the story that occurred in year 4000 Yah. The marker at 5000 Yah is the celebration of 1,000 years later. The Byzantines and others decided they would lead this great pilgrimage to Jerusalem, and they found that most of those who arrived died. They were poisoned. The waters under the temple were poisonous, and it fulfilled the Torah's prediction that of infidelity is what happened in 133 CE. 1,000 years after that, but exactly 40 Yovel from year 4000 Yah, is when Yahweh will return so that he can begin the day of rest, the 1,000-year millennia. Therefore, he will return to fulfill the last two moeds. The second to last is Yom Kippurim, which will be the day of his return. Put in our pagan calendars, it is October 2nd at sundown in 2033 CE. 5 days later, the earth will be completely renewed and converted, all religions gone, all politics gone, all of man's corruptions gone, all of man's ridiculous religious shrines gone, and the earth will be returned to the conditions experienced in the Garden of Eden, and we will spend 1,000 years of rest and reflection in the presence of our God, just as had occurred with Adam in the Garden of Great Joy, the Garden of Eden. At the end of that 1,000 years, at year 7,000 Yah, we will commence a new creation. That's what the eighth day of Sukkah is all about. God's going to create a new universe with us as witnesses this time. This story that we are reading, we will get to witness ourselves, and a new universe will be created for the express purpose for us to camp out in it with our Heavenly Father, explore it with Him, with all the joys of exploration and sharing as His children. That is the story. It is all presented here. And the thing that makes it easiest to understand is God's correlation of the greater luminary with the fourth day as a sign of these meeting times, the Moed, and how collectively God's fulfillment of these days tells us precisely when He has and will continue to engage in our lives to facilitate His covenant relationship. It is not difficult to figure this out. God laid it all out for us. There is no reason to be ignorant of it. That is the timing. Now, when you apply this timeline, and there are hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of other clues that God has provided that are specific, that affirm this timeline and what's going to happen on these days, what you come to realize is that the tribulation will begin 7 years before the Yovel celebration of Yom Kippurim in 2033. That puts the beginning of the tribulation in November of 2026, which means that the harvest known as Teruah, the day where those of us who are enriched by God's Torah teaching and empowered by His Spirit, who have availed ourselves of the first four Moed Mikre, who have become immortal because of Passover, who have become perfected by God because of matzah unleavened bread, who have been adopted into His covenant family on Bukkurim, and then empowered and enriched on Shavuah, on Teruah, we're called to be His witnesses. But we will be called home prior to the beginning of the tribulation. Could happen on any Teruah between now and then. But we are now in the year, pagan calendar 2013. Yah is going to return in 2033, year 6000 on His calendar. 6 years prior to that, we begin the tribulation. So human history, as we know it, has 20 years left. There's 20 years left. And from that, if you subtract the 7 years of the tribulation, those of us who are part of God's covenant family, our time is very short indeed. 7 years less than 20. 13 years and change. That's all we have left to share this message. Now, in that this is among the most important predictions in Scripture, and the first of countless prophecies regarding the redemptive mission of Yahweh's human manifestation, Yahusha, let's linger here a while longer and consider what can be gleaned from the historical record. Now, I'm going to review some of this material that I have shared with you, because the better you come to understand it, the more you are capable of appreciating God's prophetic timeline, the better position you are in to make decisions regarding your life and those that you love. The year of Yahusha's arrival is promoted and broadly believed by biblical scholars to be 4 BCE, because Mataniah, which name means Yahweh's gift, been corrupted to Matthew, said that it occurred during the reign of King Herod. However, the scholarly extrapolation is based upon an erroneous interpretation of Josephus. You know, sometimes you just look at a word, and no matter how hard you try, you can't get your. Maybe I'm unique in this. I hope that this is something I share in common with Moshe, is sometimes stumbling over words. But the now anglicized corruption of Josephus's history is the recording of an eclipse. The man we refer to as Josephus wrote the history of the Jews. He was actually a traitor. He was a leader in the army protecting Israel against the Romans. And to save his own skin, he turned a traitor and then became an historian. But the timing of 4 BCE is based entirely on a misinterpretation of his testimony. We'll return to that in a moment. Good morning and welcome back to Shattering Mists. We are talking about the timeline of creation. We were just about to go through the history of time, particularly talking about the actual time that Yahusha arrived, which was to be at the Tabernacles in 2 BCE, and the time that he fulfilled the reason that the diminished corporeal manifestation of Yahweh was sent to planet Earth in year to fulfill in year 4000 Yah, which was the first Moed, which serve as signs of the light for us. Those first Moed being Pesach, Matzah, Bukkurim, and Shavuah, all fulfilled in year 4000 Yah. During that preamble, speaking of day one, I said that inclusive of the time that was spent in the Garden of Eden, that Adam was with us for 1,000 years. And Warren from Arizona has called with a question regarding that assessment of time. Hello, Warren. How are you?
Good. How are you this morning?
Fine.
Great. Just had a question, because I had remembered that in Genesis 5:5, it said that Adam lived to 930 years. Is there what's a 70-year difference?
Yes, that is correct. It reads in Bereshith 5:3. When Adam had existed 130 years, he fathered a child in his likeness, similar to his image, and he called his name Seth. And then in the next statement, it says, the days Adam existed after he fathered Seth were 800 years. He fathered other sons and daughters. All of the days of Adam existed were 930 years, and then he died. So that's from Barbara Sheath 5-3, 5-4, and 5-5.
Uh-huh.
Now, my statement was, so that's 930 years, so there's a difference in 70 years if you go to 1,000.
Uh-huh.
And the reason that I said that if you add the time that Adam with Yahweh existed in the garden to his mortal existence, you come up with 1,000 years, is because in the garden, while Adam was in relationship with Yahweh, he was immortal. Time was irrelevant. We too will return to this period. In between year 6 and year 7,000 Yah, we too will experience what Adam experienced, which is a condition where we are no longer stuck in time, where time is no longer counted, where time is utterly and completely immaterial, because we will be like light. We will be on a photon of light, and I've shared this in many programs.
So he times, existed before
time. Simply
time.
Exists.
So Adam existed before time.
Well,
before
Adam existed. Actually, Adam existed in a place where time was irrelevant.
Right, it wasn't.
And so, right,
wasn't
so, right, so if you want to look at what is God's favorite number? 7, right? Every time that God does anything, it's 6 + 1 = 7.
Right.
And so you've got 930 years that he existed as a mortal, stuck like the rest of us are currently in time.
Mm-hmm.
930 years. And God's whole layout, his whole presentation of Scripture is, I want you to look at the information that I'm providing here, and I want you to think about it, and I want you to come to what is the most reasonable conclusion as to why I told you about the first man, that it was 930 years that he existed outside of this garden and fathered children and lived.
Mm-hmm.
And that the most reasonable conclusion is that this is the first millennia of human history outside of the garden. God is setting up a 6 + 1 timeline of 7,000 years. And so there was time in the garden where time was irrelevant because Adam was immortal.
Mm-hmm.
And you're looking at what is the difference between 930 and 1,000, and you come up with 70,
right,
which is God's favorite number.
Yep, I was thinking too, yeah.
Yeah, so that's how I came to that. Can I absolutely prove to you that from a outside the garden accounting, that time in which Adam was immortal was 70 years from our perspective, not his, because from his perspective it was eternity.
Right.
But from our perspective it was 70 years. No, but you know, sometimes what you do is you come to know the author of this story. When you come to know the author of this story, he's just marvelously consistent. And everything that he does,
yep,
and everything speaks of the exact same plan presented in the exact same way. And so it's a great question, because that's a conclusion I came to. And, you know, you seem to say, you know, that makes a lot of sense. That's what I came to, is it just makes a lot of sense. This has been Shattering Myths, and I hope, Warren, that you'll call back again on a future program.
Alex Jones here with a message that could revolutionize health in this country. Going back about a year and a half ago, I began to learn.